Well, this is day two of me not waking up from my nightmare.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh, they've gotten a bit weird, all right.
Whatever.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Sorry I didn't butt in to say that, but I don't know what I'm doing. All right, look. I'm going to get on with my life. I am, and I suggest you do the same. There is a mourning period after the mourning thereof. I get it. This is as if some family member has died. And we're trying to understand what happened. Why me? It is like some type of, and I'm sorry to make a comparison, but it is like there was some type of national catastrophe or terrorist attack, and now we have to heal. It's not that bad, but it's like that feeling. And I'm, of course, talking to those that find the president-elect to be a despicable character, in character. And I'm not going to dwell on this today, and as days go on, I'm actually going to avoid the subject completely. First of all, a three-step program as to how to get over all of this trauma. First step is to go to sleep and then just hope that you're going to wake up and this didn't happen. That really doesn't work. I've tried that a couple of times already. I napped a couple of times yesterday, figuring that if I wake up, it would have all have been some type of horrible nightmare. But every time I wake up and this things and it still didn't go away. So that's not working. Number two, take all those freaking lawn signs down. Take all the political lawn signs away. I want no trace whatsoever that there was an election. It's over. It doesn't exist anymore. I don't want to talk about it, and I certainly don't want to see it.
Sign, everywhere a sign. Block, can't you see it?
Get rid of your signs now.
Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the sign?
In some towns across the country, it is illegal to have a political sign on your property after the fact. Not in every town. In many towns also, you can put anything on your lawn that you want as long as you want. You could literally hang somebody in effigy on your front lawn as long as it's a dummy and not a real person. You can do anything on your lawn that you want, and in some towns, no one can do anything about it. That's your property. You can do what you want. Again, in other towns, political signs must be removed after their purpose. I'm just asking you politely to take your signs down. Now, some of you are so freaking lazy. You weren't lazy enough to put them up, but you are lazy enough to take them down. Those are the people that never take down their Christmas lights. Those are the people that still have the jack-o'-lantern carved pumpkins in front of their house and the Halloween decorations, you know, the little dummies hanging from your lamppost, you know, to scare little kids. Halloween was over a week ago. Take those fucking things off your lawn. I can't force you to do it, but again, please take them down. That's step number two. Get rid of them now.
Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the sign?
Don't do it now. Do it after the show. Or you can put the show on pause and go out and do it now, but then you won't ever come back to me. I know you won't. I know your pattern. So wait till after the show and then go outside and take that, or take all that Halloween crap off your lawn. And at the same time, remove those political signs as a favor to me. I don't ask much of you. As a favor to me. All right, that's number two. Number three is just stop talking about it. Stop talking about it. Stop getting into conversations about the election. If you want the election to be over, stop talking about it. And that goes doubly for me. So I am going to shut up about the election from this point on, except I want to say one more thing, and then I'm going to move on to the comedy aspect of this show, because I kind of treat this show really as an escape, because man, do I need one, and you probably do too. No matter who you voted for, you probably need an escape. So, I mean, I like to do the comedy entertainment part of the thing, you know, and do the little stupid interviews and things like that, and, you know, be the sarcastic son of a bitch that you love about me. I get it. I get it. I'm your little puppet. I get it. It's fine. It doesn't make any difference to me. I'm earning a living doing this. I don't care. All right. But here's the one thing I want to say, and then I'm going to stop the political talk. Mr. Trump, I should have some kind of music so that when I address him, he can listen to me, although he listens to nobody, and I hope that changes. But here, listen to me, you misogynistic asshole. Here's what I want to say to you. I want you to understand that you did not win the popular vote. Now, the popular vote doesn't matter in an election. It means nothing. I don't know why we have it. It's just a matter of interest. But here's where it really makes a difference, Mr. Trump, where the Electoral College doesn't really mean crap. And by the way, it'll elect you as president. But if you won the state of Virginia by like 2,000 votes, that means it was pretty much split. You may have won the state by a couple of votes, but it's not like everybody in Virginia thinks that you're fantastic. No, that's not the case. And I want you to understand that, Mr. Trump, because I want you to work your fucking ass off every day of your life to make sure that everybody loves you. And you better do that, because the popular vote was for Clinton, which means that a little bit more than half the country didn't want you as president in a vehemently strong manner. So you need to convince a little over half of the country that you're not an asshole anymore. Once an asshole, always an asshole. I can't do anything about that. The best you can do is make sure that you work for everybody in this country, not just the people that voted for you, but also for the people that didn't. You need to convince them that you're working on behalf of all of them. And your biggest road to success, Mr. Trump, otherwise you're going to have a very difficult presidency, I guarantee you, because those that hate you will continue to hate you unless you can turn that around somehow. You have better conduct your presidency in a professional, understanding manner. Start listening to people, not telling them what to do. And most importantly, stay in the middle. You ran on being a basic independent. You put down the Republican Party, even though you use them as a platform. I don't care about that anymore. If you want to be politically successful, or successful as a president at all, work with both sides equally. Respect both sides equally, and understand more than half the country thinks you're an asshole. Now you need to turn that around. Don't keep them alienated. Get them on your side. You're a businessman. That's your business. Be president to everybody, because half of the people say you ain't their president. You got to turn that around, Mr. Trump, whatever the hell your name is. All right, I'm done talking about that. Here's something more important to figure out.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing?
What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
This is the most difficult time of year for wearing clothes. So let me explain why. Because you have some days that are rather comfortable. In the 60s, I'm talking about the Northeast where our studio resides. Sometimes it's in the 60s. Sometimes it's in the 40s. Sometimes it's in the 30s. Sometimes it's in the 50s. Sometimes it's in the 40s. Sometimes it's in the 60s. You never know. And it's just not a morning to afternoon kind of thing. It's a day-to-day kind of thing. So what do you wear? Well, you've come to the right place. Here's my suggestion. Wear whatever the hell you want, and if it's cold, put a jacket on. Thank you.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing?
Thank you. Thank
what
you.
What are you wearing today?
Thank you.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today.
And if you get warm and you're wearing a jacket, here's what you do. You take your jacket off. I know you need me to tell you these things, but so many people, I don't know what to wear. Should I get my summer clothes out? Should I get my winter clothes out? No, just get a jacket and shut up. Get a jacket. And this sweater stuff, people don't wear sweaters anymore. Oh, I'm a little bit cold. I better put a sweater on. Who are you, my grandmother? Stop with the sweater crap. Nobody wears a sweater anymore. Seriously, I mean, yuck.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
I never find out about things until I have to figure out what's going on. There's been a phrase that's been used all of a sudden all over television commercials and in the advertising lingo, and I've heard it, and for at least a period of 2 weeks, I had no idea what they were talking about. And you still may not know what this word means. All of a sudden, it's popped into our lingo. And I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. Here's the word. It's spelled B-O-G-O. And I don't know what the hell a BOGO is. I thought it was like a some kind of new pogo stick or something for Christmas. You know, buy the kids the BOGO. Buy two BOGOs and get one BOGO free. And that's almost accurate. And let me explain to you why. What the fuck is a BOGO? I thought I was misunderstanding at first, and they were trying to talk about bozo. And as much as I dislike clowns immensely, I don't understand the purpose of them. If you put a lot of makeup on your face, you are not automatically funny to me. Someone squirting somebody else with a bottle of seltzer water, which is a phrase nobody uses anymore, I don't immediately laugh. I say to myself, what the hell are you doing? Why would you do that? And I have a sense of humor, but I don't find that stuff to be humorous in any sense of the word. So I'm not into the clown thing. So I even the bozo thing kind of threw me. I didn't know what the hell was going on. What is this BOGO thing? And then I actually had to go onto the internet because that is where things are accurate. Uh-huh. At least for this purpose. And I find out that BOGO is an acronym. I think, okay, it's... I don't know what that could be then. It's buy one, get one. Okay, I've heard about that before. When you go into a store and you want to buy a flashlight, if you buy the flashlight, you can get a second flashlight. I get that. Usually you get the second flashlight for free, but it's not BOGOF. It's just BOGO. So it's buy one, get one. And I assume that the inference is that you get another one for free. Then I read further because I'm not too understanding of what this is. Why are we doing this? Because we don't have time to say buy one, get one free or buy one, get one. So we have to make up these little acronyms because that takes so freaking long to say. I mean, my life would be over by the time I said the entire phrase, right? Let's try it. Buy one, get one. BOGO. Same amount of time as far as I am concerned. Why is it in our society we do things that make things more confusing? I think we do it because we think the catchphrases are cute. I don't think they're cute at all. I think they're annoying. And I think if you took a survey and you asked people, are catchphrases annoying or useful? They're annoying. I think it would be like 100% annoying. Of course, you can't take a poll because they're always wrong. By the way, for now on, when anybody takes a poll, I don't give a crap. It doesn't mean anything anymore because all the polls were wrong for the election. Now polls mean absolutely nothing. Like overnight, polls, what are they? What are you talking about? Anyway, BOGO. So I go a little bit deeper into it, and is it buy one and then you get one free? That means it's 50% off? Yes, Ron, that is what it means. Okay, but here's my question now, because this is a matter of interpretation. If I just want to get one flashlight and not a second flashlight for free, if I buy one flashlight, do I pay full price because I'm only getting one and the deal was I have to buy a second one to get one free, or first one to get one free, a second one to get one free? I don't understand. So I only want one flashlight. Well, that's full price. All right, here's another flashlight. It's still full price, but you can get the other one for free. Okay, so now if I want, all right, I get that. I get that part. I get a free flashlight. If I buy one, I get another one for free. I get that part. But it also means if I buy one flashlight and one flashlight is all I want, is that flashlight 50% off? Because in the entire deal of getting two flashlights and getting one for free, I'm getting 50% off of two flashlights. Let's say I don't want your second little flashlight. You can keep more flashlights in stock that way. I only want one flashlight. Do I get 50% off of that flashlight? Well, in some places, yes. If you go into a supermarket and you see that BOGO thing and you want a can of corn, I only want one can of corn, fine. That's not a dollar. It's only 50 cents. Okay. If you see in a store like, three for $5, do you have to buy three of them to get that price? Or is it, I'm confused, you see. So you have to ask a follow-up question. So I stay away from the BOGOs. I stay away from the BOGOs. I don't understand what a BOGO is still, and I don't like BOGOs, and that's my BOGO story. That was pretty boring, wasn't it? Yeah, it was boring. All right.
You are listening to the Ron Van Dam Show. Sounds like somebody needs to learn to make better choices.
I know you love this program. You can donate to it if you would like to. You go to the Podbean site, Podbean, The Ron Van Dam Show, and you'll be able to contribute to the program. I feel like I'm playing a saxophone on a median strip on a busy highway asking you for money because I'm homeless, but I swear I won't use it on alcohol or drugs. That's what I feel like.
Yeah? Visa, MasterCard, and Discover. Oh.
All right. Good. That is actually from a phone thing. Not phone sex. Stop it. It sounds like it's phone sex, but it's not. It's the Bunny Ranch in Nevada. And we've had the owner of the Bunny Ranch on the program quite a few times. And when you call the Bunny Ranch, it's a house of prostitution is what it is. And it's in Nevada where it's legal, not in Las Vegas and not in Reno, but the smaller towns, you can actually, it's legal to have bordellos where people come and they pay for sex, usually with girls. And yeah. And when you call, they tell you that that's how they, it's really funny. Do you find that to be funny? It's true. That's the way they run their business. Listen to this. Listen. This is calling the Bunny Ranch in Las Vegas. House of prostitution. Legal.
Hello, this is Madam Suzette.
Yep.
Thank you for calling Sagebrush Ranch, a fine addition to Dennis Hoff's collection of cat houses. If you know your party's extension, please dial it now. Otherwise, listen to the following options. Press 1 for directions to the Sagebrush Ranch. Press 2 to make an appointment with one of our starlets. Press 3 for limo and sedan services. Press 4 for employment opportunities. Press 5 for sex prices. Press 6 to hear one of our starlets in action. Or press 0 to speak to one of our customer service representatives.
This is Hollywood. You want to come please me? Oh, I'm at the Sagebrush Ranch waiting for you. Yeah? I'm right there. Harder. God, this is so good. Yeah? Oh, we accept Visa, MasterCard, and Discover. But don't forget, cash is king. Yeah, baby, come see me.
I'm sorry.
Exiting the system.
Yeah, you Goodbye. Oddly enough, Donald Trump used that same recording to raise campaign funds. All right, that was nasty.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat?
Gentlemen, did you ever notice that it always seems to be the ladies who pamper themselves with a spa day, with the mani-pedi and the facials and the massage? Do you ever think maybe you'd like to have a special day for yourself, but you are afraid it might be a little gay? Well, good news, gentlemen. Now you can have your own special spa day at Ramon Ramirez's Not-So-Gay Salon for Men. Let Ramon Ramirez take the stress off a tough day with a long, deep massage. It's not gay, it's therapeutic. After you relax, Ramon Ramirez will use special oils and lotions and maybe clean up some of your hairier man parts. It's not gay, it's hygienic. A lot of guys are doing it. Then it's time to kick back and let it all hang out in a long steam room session with Ramon Ramirez. It's not gay, much. So gentlemen, why wait? It's time for you to have a great day for yourself at Ramon Ramirez's Not So Gay Salon for Men. Please, no fat guys.
Michael Nathanson joins us now. He has a book out called Cries of the Eagle. Is that out on the stands already, Mike?
Yes, it is. It's recently released, and it's available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and on the stands.
Good. Now, before we get into the book itself, I understand that you come from a family of writers.
I do. My father was an author, best known for a book he wrote called The Dirty Dozen,
uh-huh.
and he'd written several others as well in his lifetime.
Great. Now, this book kind of, it revolves around the subject matter of international terrorism. How did that come about that you would get into that genre?
Well, my fascination with the whole subject of Islam, uh-huh. The culture, the politics, and then subsequent to that, the terrorism aspect of it really began. I was on a business trip back in the 80s in an Arab Muslim country,
mm-hmm.
and so I spent some time immersed in the culture,
uh-huh.
and became kind of fascinated with it, and I have studied it a fair amount since then.
Right.
And it, having a book in me that I wanted to write, this idea had been in my heart for some years to write, and I finally got to a point where I said, well, I better do it now or else I'm not going to do it.
I guess. It's a subject matter that probably will be with us for a while, so it certainly is timely. And what usually happens, I mean, I'm assuming, is that something seems to be an environment where the mind can create different scenarios. And I assume that's what happened. You involve characters, put them into those situations, and books evolve.
Yes. I mean, the characters are, I hope for the reader, real and tangible human beings, whether good or bad, that is up to the reader, but these are to be people that walk you through a story that is not just a story of terrorism, the act of violence, which did happen in the beginning of the book, but it's a story that unravels a couple of important areas. One, the organization, the terrorist organization that had been embedded in the United States here for over 30 years, and then also it's a story of a family that was torn apart by the act of their son, and so there's a deeper story behind the story.
Yeah. Now, as you were actually involved in that area of the world for a while, there might be a misunderstanding in this country of the Muslim faith. Is there indeed a misunderstanding that Americans have over this Muslim faith and terrorism and Islam?
Well, there is a small segment of a very large religious population. Mm-hmm. I mean, goodness gracious, the Muslim population is pushing up 1.6 billion in the world. It is huge. And 50% of that population are by birth so-named Muslim,
right.
and are not really practicing. 40% are practicing, but not what you would call radical in their views, and it's estimated that less than 10% of the Muslim population actually subscribe to the tenets of the 7th century Islam,
right.
the violent overthrow of non-believers and the establishment of the world caliphate, and so it is a small percentage. We have to be careful that we are vigilant about terrorism,
right.
And those who would put that onto the world,
mm-hmm.
but we cannot vilify or demonize an entire religious body of people.
So when a president, now a president, makes comments like banning or vetting Muslims into the United States. Is there a misunderstanding there, or do we misunderstand that comment?
You know, that comment, I think when you get into an arena as tense as our world political stage mm-hmm. is now, and the geopolitical situation as tightly strung as it is, you will have comments, the pendulum will swing to the far left, and
right.
the pendulum will swing to the far right.
Yeah.
And I think what you hope is that the new sitting president will have a body of advisors who are reasoning men of sound mind and of compassion, and who will guide him into the correct decisions for the safety of America and Americans, and for that matter, for the safety of the world.
Yeah, boy, do I hope that. Okay, let's move on from this point. Otherwise, we'd be talking for a couple
of hours. How late did you stay up last night, Ron?
until my nerves calmed down. Anyway, which was quite late. Let's talk about the novel itself. You kind of give a message in this book. I don't know how deep you want to get into the message, but are you indeed prescribing a message to the reader?
Well, I write about my beliefs and a belief. I'm personally a Christian believer, uh-huh. and I feel that there is a message of love, redemption, and grace in the Christian message. And I think that in the device of the novel and in writing and in dealing with the characters, there is a character that is completely at his lowest point of life, I believe, and completely in despair. And the message, the gospel message of love and hope and redemption that is offered by Jesus Christ is one that I think we can all stand to hear. Uh-huh. It is a good message. It is a positive message. And so it is woven into the story as part of the story.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, when we talk about religion, which I tend try to not to do on the show because it's such a personal situation. But,
sure, I understand.
But religions kind of do really meld if you look at them in a certain way. As different as they are, theoretically and historically perhaps, the ethics of them, most of them, are pretty much in line.
You know, there is a difference, certainly, if you look at the historical timeline mm-hmm. of various religions, you look at the world in which they arose, and you look at the theology, in some cases, the theology that crosses over into a political theology or a political society. There are differences, and that's a study that's long and many years of work. But there are differences without question. I think we all, in our hearts, are hardwired to seek our Creator, to seek the higher power of this universe, and the path certainly is different for many people.
Right, a different path, but possibly the same goal.
The goal, I think, probably is quite the most good-willed people's hearts, yes.
Yes. Ah, there's the rub. Okay. The book itself is fascinating, intriguing, makes you think, and it's available everywhere. That's the best part of it. It's Cries of the Eagle, and man, are you already working on another one?
Yes, Ron, I am. I'm working on a sequel. It's called Taking the Eagle's Nest, and it will be available, looks like, end of summer 2017.
Wonderful, wonderful. Hey, it's been fun speaking to you. We do recommend the book, Cries of the Eagle, available everywhere. And a pleasure next time around. We'll hook up and talk about the next one.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me, Ron. I really do appreciate it and have enjoyed spending the time with you.
Thanks, Michael. Take care. Wonderful man. Interesting man, don't you think? I do. I think he's very interesting. Book sounds good. Pick up the book. I do recommend it. Not so bad. Pretty good. Really, really good.
When you reach for a beer, what are you looking for? The finest malts, grains, and hops? An artisan ale that represents a modern take on traditional brewing techniques that master brewers have refined and treasured for years. A true beer drinking experience. Or like most of us, are you just looking to get fucked up on the cheap? Well, if you're like the rest of us, congratulations, your beer is here. It's Fockenhalter. It's not a great beer. It's not even a good beer. It's a beer that's $4 a case, and it's strong enough to melt the chrome off a trailer hitch. So kiss your liver goodbye and say hello to Fockenhalter. It's beer.
It is beer, and it's excellent beer as well. I drink it, and I pee it all day. Hey, kids, I did want to play my favorite song for you because of the words. The words in this song represent how I feel about my relationship with people. As you know, I'm a very deep, emotional, intelligent man, and I change my socks every other day. Not every day, I must admit to you, every other day. Nonetheless, I am a man, and I'm a man with many emotions and an incredible amount of depth. I am so deep that when you reach inside my soul, you will actually feel my toes, because I am very, very deep inside. And when I hear a song where the words express my feelings and my emotions so perfectly, then I start to wear that song on my sleeve, which is kind of interesting. So listen to the words. They represent my feeling about people and my relationship with people. Very, very poignant. Very, very poignant words that mean so much to me.
Jag är det och kommer jag kommer då det och så personer som tar över. Jag är väldigt fan man i blå rum.
I don't know. I don't know if my thoughts can be expressed any better than that. I don't think they can be. That is how on the money that song is for expressing my emotions to people. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're almost out of time for today, and that means nothing to you, really. But I do sound like the guy, actually. I'll be back again tomorrow. Scheduled to be with me tomorrow would be Tori Lagarde. She's a humorist. I think she's funny. But more than that, what's behind her words are poignant and interesting. She joins me tomorrow as we go through the day's events and such and discuss the world around us. Tomorrow is also Veterans Day. It is a day that we set aside, as we do for other holidays, to remind ourselves, because we are clueless most of the time, that we are to honor and thank our veterans for their service. Look, I don't believe in days like that, because when you have days like that, it should be every day, not just on one day of the year. But I guess in our busy society, that's the best we can do. So fine. But it is a time to say thank you for your service, because it's true, man. I mean, they do stuff that you wouldn't do, I wouldn't do. Some of you have done it, and I thank you, because that goes above and beyond. I mean, I know that it's presented as a job. You want a job? Yeah, or join the military. You know, and you think, okay. And then you get in it, and you go, whoa, this is like hard. This is hard. This is hard. And when they come back from the military, it's hard to get back into life again as we know it in our society. You've basically, whether you've lost anything physically or a limb or gone through any trauma or not, you have given up your life for this country. I hope in many cases it's worth it, and most it is. But thank you for your service, and tomorrow is Veterans Day, and we're going to have a couple of special interviews in that regard, which will be posted separately on all of the sites, and will be picked up syndicated-wise by many radio stations across the country. All right, I'm out of time for today. I hope you have a wonderful day, and even if you don't, I hope that you do anyway. I wish you peace.
whatever.